Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Iowa Republican Ashley Hinson, who joins us to discuss biofuel and water regulations, as well as the upcoming appropriations process. But first, here's this week's headlines. The Black Sea Grain Initiative has been renewed, but it's still unclear for how long. The deal is usually extended every 120 days, but Russia has been pushing for a 60-day extension and insists that's what they granted in this case. Ukrainian officials say the deal has been stretched for the full 120 days. Russian officials say they are upset about restrictions on the country's fertilizer shipments. The United Nations has deflected any comment on the duration of the new deal, saying only that it is clear the agreement has been extended. The Department of Agriculture plans to allow states to offer more free school meals to students. USDA on Wednesday rolled out a rule change that would lower an existing threshold of students living below the federal poverty line that determines if a district can offer everyone free meals. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack said USDA did not have an estimate on the amount of students who would benefit from the change, but the number would likely increase. And finally, the Waters of the U.S. rule is now in effect in most of the country. A federal judge in Texas blocked the Environmental Protection Agency's latest attempt at the rule from going into effect there and in Idaho. The judge said the new WOTUS rule is unlikely to withstand judicial review, but EPA Administrator Michael Regan argued the rule should be able to work with an upcoming Supreme Court ruling, telling the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee the agency had threaded a very good needle on the rule. Iowa Republican Ashley Hinson voted in favor of a Congressional Review Act resolution in the House to disapprove of the WOTUS rule. She says the current language needs to be scrapped.
When you look at what this administration has done to supercharge the EPA, and obviously I see this as just huge federal overreach. What our producers need is certainty. They don't need a federal government that's coming in to overregulate their land and water. I say this all the time here in Washington, D.C., and I say it on the ground home in Iowa, too, that farmers are the best stewards of their land. I have been on so many farms where I see firsthand all these practices in action that are truly helping with soil quality, water quality, and better outputs. And so that's where I think our conversation should be here, not on burdensome regulations coming from the EPA.
So sticking with EPA issues for a bit here, but shifting away from WOTUS, obviously being from Iowa, biofuels is king in that neck of the woods. And Iowa is a part of a number of states pushing for E15 sales yet this summer, with the approval of that petition EPA proposing for 24, still trying to figure out what the 23 approach. They say they're exploring all options. Based on your conversations with the agency and with your colleagues, do you think they're going to get there?
Well, I certainly hope so. And I think it also sends quite the message that our entire Iowa delegation is united on this in asking them to issue an emergency waiver here for the summer driving season. We wanted to make sure we were backing up Governor Reynolds and her request to make sure that we actually had some certainty. 2024, frankly, is too late. It's 200 days late. We need that certainty for this summer. And then, frankly, when you're talking about the situation that we are in right now, where energy is expensive, energy is driving inflation costs in this country, and that directly hurts consumers, that directly hurts Iowans. So I see the best win-win here as granting this waiver. It will provide consumer choice at the pump. It'll help support jobs. It'll, again, drive that cost down, which drive costs down for everything. And so I see that as a true win-win. So I've joined my colleagues. We've sent letters to the administration, to the EPA, to ask them to issue this waiver for the summer driving season. But again, they need to stop dragging their feet on these ethanol-related issues, because this is about doing the right thing for consumers and doing the right thing for Iowa agriculture at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, then looking at this issue, Congress could also step in here and pass legislation on the subject with an immediate effective date once it would be signed into law. Is there, I mean, knowing that you've got a really short window of time basically between now and the beginning of May to actually, you know, effectively make that decision and get final passage there, is that something that's feasible at this point, knowing the dynamics of Capitol Hill?
You know, we're certainly going to try. I think our best bet is to go this route, to ask for the RVP waiver and the emergency waiver for the summer. I think that is our best bet. We continue to have colleagues who we're having these conversations with about the benefits of E15 and continuing to build that consensus. What I think is important here is we are building a unique, I guess I would call it a unique cooperative in Congress, where people realize that liquid fuels matter and as a choice for consumers going forward, whether that's the oil and gas industry or the ethanol industry, people are partnering up more than they have in the past, which I think is good to see. This administration has an unhealthy obsession with electric vehicles, and it is very clear to me that we can't flip a switch on this overnight.
We'll be right back with more from Congresswoman Hinson right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. The upcoming Farm Bill is sure to be impacted by federal debt ceiling negotiations expected to take place later this year. Congresswoman Ashley Hinson would like to see the process move forward.
Speaker McCarthy's been very, very clear that he wants the president to come and negotiate, and we cannot keep spending like we have. There are areas where we do need to make investments. I will do everything I can to argue for Iowa's priorities in the Farm Bill. I'm not on the Agriculture Committee, but I am on the Ag FDA Appropriations Subcommittee. So our committees are already having those conversations about what that looks like between the so-called authorizers and the appropriators. So we're having those conversations. But Speaker McCarthy, I think, is absolutely spot on when he and we're as a conference talking about the American people realize the government has spent too much money. We have to reel that in, and we need to have a serious conversation because we have to change our ways. House Republicans stand committed to be reasonable here and sensible, but we have to be talking about reeling in that spending. And I think we can still invest in our priorities. And I think food security is a huge priority. Crop insurance programs are a huge priority. So we're looking at, as a conference, you know, there's a lot of proposals for maybe work requirements around, you know, the SNAP programs and the benefits programs. I think that's a win-win when you look at our economy, where we're trying to get people back to work. The Democrats in Congress, for instance, even on things like the child tax credit, took away the work requirement element. And what happens when you pay people and you don't require them to work? They stay home. So I think that there is a win-win here to be able to grow our economy with these policies and still reel in spending at the same time.
I want to ask a question about something that you've identified as a Farm Bill priority for you, and that is increasing funding for foreign market development and the market asset access program. That's funding that has been somewhat stagnant for a number of years. Do you think, you know, obviously there's, you know, quite a bit to be said about more money, ag groups could do more promotion, but is there going to be budgetary room to make an increase like that happen?
Well, that is something I'm going to fight for. And you hit the nail on the head, Spencer, in talking about that this has been stagnant for a long time. And when I look at investments, I look at return on that investment. And for every dollar that's invested in these programs, it's typically netting more than $24 in benefit. That to me seems like a pretty good rate of return. I also see that this administration has been really lackadaisical in its approach to trade. So when I'm looking at how can we help with actually not only national security, but global security, it's trade agreements, it's making sure our producers have additional markets to get to. And that's pretty much one of the number one things that I hear as I travel through the district.
As we wrap up here, you mentioned your membership on the Ag Appropriations Subcommittee with jurisdiction over USDA and FDA, currently scheduled to hear from USDA and FDA next week during hearings. What are you looking forward to learning from USDA and FDA during those hearings next week?
So we've already kind of had a few hearings specifically on things like egg prices. And then broadband is another area that is a huge priority for Iowa that I'm looking forward to asking the secretary continued questions on. The ReConnect programs and the programs that are designed to help make sure that we get that access to as many people as possible. I want to learn more about what their next steps are for that. We know that there are some challenges with the mappings that exists right now. And we urge people to get on and go through the challenge process. They can contact our office if they're in an area that, for instance, the map says that they're supposed to have broadband and they don't. We want to know that so we can make sure that challenge gets submitted. But I'm looking forward to asking the secretary about that, asking him about trade, for example, since I already talked about what a priority that is, what their approach is going to be. We have an Iowan, obviously, as a trade rep now with USDA. Took a while to get there, but I'm glad we have someone. So I'm hopeful and anxious to hear what that process looks like going forward as well. Mm-hmm.
The appropriations process in full swing on Capitol Hill. Congresswoman Hinson, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel. But first, our Lydia Johnson walks us through the conservation language in the Farm Bill.
Title II in the Farm Bill includes conservation programs. There are more than 20 distinct conservation programs, subprograms, and initiatives grouped into five categories: working lands, land retirement, easements, partnerships and grants, and conservation compliance. You may have heard of some of the conservation efforts like the Conservation Reserve Program, Environmental Quality Incentives Program, and the Conservation Stewardship Program. The conservation title received 7% of the total funding in the 2018 Farm Bill. One aspect of the upcoming Farm Bill that may affect funding for the conservation title is how USDA plans to implement climate-focused initiatives included in the Inflation Reduction Act. In February, USDA released the first $850 million in conservation funding from the $18 billion in the IRA. EQIP and CSP split the initial investment with the Agricultural Conservation Easement Program and the Regional Conservation Partnership Program. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Who's replacing petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who mapped the soybean genome for better varieties? You did. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. We're going to convene a panel discussion now to discuss some biofuels policy issues, including some recent developments that we've seen within the last week or two. Joined this week by Joe Kakish with Growth Energy, as well as Alexa Kumbelik with the American Soybean Association. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Joe, I want to go to you first because we've seen some conversation from the Environmental Protection Agency saying that they are exploring all available options to ensure E15 can be sold in the summer of 2023 after tentatively approving and taking comments on the approval of a governor's petition for 2024 sales. But on the subject of 2023, what are they telling you about how they're doing on the progress of getting to those 2023 sales? And do you think the agency can get there?
Well, we all know it's critical that EPA continue to allow the sale of E15 in 2023. Really can't afford to take a gap year in 2023 on those sales so that consumers can continue to reap the benefits economically and both and environmentally as well. In addition, retailers really need that certainty and actually along the entire supply chain to continue those sales. So we need to get an answer pretty quickly. And I think the options on the table are relatively straightforward from EPA's perspective. Of course, you have the state opt-outs, which EPA has proposed to only include starting in 2024. So that's an unfortunate reflection of EPA's delay in taking action on those opt-outs, which were presented to the agency almost a year ago for some of the earlier states. What's really on the table right now is what's called an emergency RVP waiver, which, if you remember, EPA issued series of last year in response to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which generated a pretty significant amount of price volatility and price increases, but also uncertainty with respect to supply in 2022 throughout most of the year. As we all know as well, unfortunately, that the war situation continues over in Ukraine. And the same bases upon which EPA supported issuances of the emergency waivers in 2022 should continue into this year as well.
Well, and speaking on the legislative standpoint, there is an option there for Capitol Hill to step in here ahead of a May 1st deadline that a lot of industry officials say is kind of the effective deadline for June 1st sales. But obviously, the dynamics of Capitol Hill are going to play into here. Does Growth Energy believe that some kind of legislative solution in advance of the effective deadline is going to be feasible here?
Well, I will say that we are heartened by the attention of members of the Senate. Senator Thune and about 15 other senators in particular sent letters to Congress, letter to EPA, urging them to take action and reflecting again the seriousness of the uncertainty with respect to fuel supply. I'm hoping that that kind of high-level pressure will play out in the agency as they really recognize that there is broad-based consensus for the need for the continuation of E15 in 2023.
Mm-hmm. So Alexa, bringing you into the fold here, because almost immediately after the Environmental Protection Agency announced that kind of the multi-year blending targets late last year, we saw concern from the biomass-based diesel community about just where their levels were set, arguing that those levels had actually been set below the actual production capacity that the industry has. In conversations with EPA at this point, I know things are kind of in flux in terms of what a final rule will ultimately look like, but how have discussions with the agency gone about potential increases on those volumes?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've been engaging with the EPA since that draft rule came out in December and have had, you know, pretty good communications with them. I will say, you know, they've been relatively open to listening to our concerns. Whether or not that means we'll see any movement in the final rule remains to be seen. But I think, you know, from our perspective, they were using a USDA baseline number for feedstock growth that cannot account for growth, you know, within the RFS. And so essentially, they're using a no growth model to justify no growth in biomass-based diesel volume.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Who increased sales to Egypt 700%? You did. Who's the number one protein in chicken feed? You are. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Plans to expand the nation's soybean crush capacity are in jeopardy, many worry, if the Environmental Protection Agency moves forward with its current blending targets.
A lot of this announced crush capacity expansion is based on indications that the federal government has given us through the 2020 through 2022 RVO increases, through the announcements of the SAF Grand Challenge and you know, other priorities in terms of lowering greenhouse gas emissions and trying to decarbonize transportation fleets today. There was an indication that there would be continued support for this industry going forward. I think, you know, we do have some states with LCFS programs that will allow for some continued growth in those areas. But without a strong RFS, it leaves a lot of questions in terms of what the market is going to do. This is a market that is driven by the RFS. And so when you essentially flatline volumes, you put a lot of these investments in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's talk about, obviously we focused on the domestic market at this point, but let's talk about the overseas market for renewable diesel, sustainable aviation fuel, for a number of the products made from processed soybeans and soybean oil. You know, what does the overseas market look like for these products, and is there growth potential that could potentially support some of this expansion?
Sure. I think, you know, we are set to be a net importer of biomass-based diesel here with the amount of consumption and demand in the United States. But certainly, you know, as different countries are looking to increase their renewable fuel production and utilization, there is going to be growing demand, you know, across the world. And I think, you know, from soy's perspective, we are, you know, maybe not the favored feedstock in some of those markets, but certainly, you know, we have a versatile product that can be used to backfill in some of these other countries. But we will be having, you know, a much larger soybean oil demand here in the United States. We'll be exporting a lot more meal. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how these markets shake out.
Mm-hmm. So let's wrap up here with a focus on the renewable volume obligation announcements that we're expecting from the EPA here in June. And Joe, that's where I want to bring you back in, because obviously we know Growth Energy has been involved in the consent decrees that have kind of established the timelines for these EPA rollouts. But we have seen previous edits to consent decrees on behalf of the EPA and Growth Energy based on the agency needing a little bit more time. Is that the case at this point with the RVO rollout that we're expecting in June? Has there been any communication that that timeline might be in flux?
Well, I certainly hope that's not the case, because even under the current consent decree that Growth negotiated with EPA, we're 6 months into the 2023 RVO. And you know, the RVO is supposed to spur market growth in renewable fuels, not to reflect an unregulated market. So in our view, June 14th is already significantly delayed. You have to remember, the 2023 RVO was due under law by November 1st of 2021. That is 18 months ago. So the notion that EPA needs additional time to figure out the RVO is not really one that we would support at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, the eyes of the biofuel industry in the country certainly keeping a very close eye on the Environmental Protection Agency for E15 news in the near term, RVO news in the slightly longer term, but no shortage of things to talk about. And Joe and Alexa, thanks for stopping by. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pegel takes a look at differences in conservation payments across the country in this week's Map It Out.
The Conservation Reserve Program is one of the largest private lands conservation programs in the country. Farmers and landowners voluntarily participate in the program by removing environmentally sensitive land from agricultural production. But many producers are not satisfied with rates being offered. This map shows the average CRP rental rate by county this year. Farmers in the Western and Southern Plains are offered between $13 and $87 per acre on average. Some in the Midwest see offers that begin at $100 per acre and go higher than $300. According to a Farm Service Agency official, rental payments are based on the relative productivity of soils in each county and the average dryland cash rent. One possible solution that could be explored in the upcoming Farm Bill would be to give more weight to erodible soil in the agency's rental rate determination process. This would allow producers to have higher rates for the less productive land. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The agenda is packed with hearings on Capitol Hill. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack will speak to the House Ag Committee on Tuesday. The House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee will explore FDA's budget request on Wednesday. And on Thursday, that subcommittee will take a look at the budget request for USDA. We'll keep an eye on those hearings and everything else going on in the world of farm policy at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.